All right, welcome. This is January 10th. The year is 2007. That's hard to believe, isn't it? You're listening to the Scared Monkeys Radio Network. My name's Dana Pretzer. The Dana Pretzer Show starts in just a couple minutes tonight. Author Stephanie Good. She's an author, an attorney, New York Times bestselling author of the book Aruba. She has a new book coming out called Exposed. She wrote a book called Law School 101. She's Larry Garrison's sister. So she's the better looking of the two, and I'm very pleased to have her on tonight. Tonight we're going to talk about internet sexual predators. Internet sexual predators. How safe is the internet? We're going to get Stephanie's thoughts on Aruba, what's been going on there. And then after that, the John Cooey, Jessica Lunsford case is prevalent in the news again with another confession of Cooey's being thrown out. I thought I'd bring back Fox News analyst, law professor, former DA Wendy Murphy to talk about how difficult is it for law enforcement to get statements from accused admitted into court, okay? How difficult is it? Are their hands being tied, or is it basically ask somebody, did you do it? Well, I want a lawyer, and then that's it. It's all over with. Is nothing admissible? So that's tonight on the Dana Pretzer Show here on the Scared Monkeys Radio Network. Okay, we're back. This is the Dana Pretzer Show on the Scared Monkeys Radio Network. It's my pleasure tonight to introduce Stephanie Good. Stephanie is an attorney. She co-authored the New York Times bestselling book Aruba. She has a new book coming out called Exposed. She's the author of a book, Law School 101. She's probably one of the busiest gals that I know. And she is the sister of Larry Garrison, the guy that you see on TV all the time, been a guest on this program, and truth be known, she's the better looking of the two. It's always... We're going to talk a little bit to Stephanie tonight about how safe is the internet and the ongoing saga of the Natalie Holloway case. Stephanie, welcome to the Dana Pretzer Show.
Thank you. Thank you for having me, Dana. I just want to correct one little thing that you said. I'm not really sure that I'm the better looking one of the two of us. I certainly don't want to insult Larry over there, so I'm going to start off by saying that I think he's probably better looking than I am.
Well, you know, I'm getting older and my eyesight is still okay, and I've seen pictures of the both of you, but okay, well, how about we call it a draw?
Okay, that's fine.
We'll call it a draw. Anyway, welcome to the program. You got a new book coming out called Exposed. Looks very interesting. In fact, those of you that are interested in it, go to scaredmonkeys.com. You'll see the Amazon link there. What I thought I'd do tonight, Stephanie, invite you onto the program, talk a little bit about the internet, how safe it's been. We've all seen the Dateline NBC shows where they set up the stings and they catch these creeps, for lack of a better term, and they pull them off. It's fantastic, the work that they're doing. As long as what they're doing is actually doing something besides just getting good ratings for Dateline NBC, I want to talk to you a little bit about that. You've got some experience with internet predators and setting them up, so to speak. Let's talk about that.
Sure. For one thing, I do think that Dateline provides a wonderful service. I'm sure their show has a lot to do with ratings, too. You know, if the shows weren't popular, they wouldn't be continuing to do them for as long as they have. But the other side of it is that it's a wonderful tool for people to see what's really going on out there in the world. And it's been really opening up a lot of people's eyes. Whenever I talk to people about Internet predators, they always come up with the Dateline shows. Everybody wants to talk about them. So I do think that it's a wonderful service for getting the word out there and making parents aware of what their kids are being exposed to.
And really, we don't see a lot of that in the media and shows to teach parents how to protect their children. As simple as letting your child have a computer with an Internet access in their room away from everyone else. Let's talk about some of the safety things that we need to remember and what you recommend to parents and to kids about how to protect themselves.
Well, you know, one of the things that I say to people when they ask me that, there are a lot of things out there, a lot of tools you can buy and download off the Internet. There are filtering software, which uses certain keywords that blocks, you know, anything that has certain words that come up on them. There's software that uses a bad site list, which blocks certain sites. But, you know, the Internet is ever evolving. So just like with software to keep viruses out, you know, virusware programs, you're always going to have something new coming up every single day. So there really is no one catch-all that can protect children out there. So what I usually start off with is education. Parents have to be aware, and if it doesn't come from the parents, I think it should come from the schools. These kids need to learn, and they need to learn while they're very young, because we all know how easy it is to teach the young kids things that seem a little more difficult when they get older. And I think if they learn at a very young age how dangerous the Internet really is and how they can protect themselves, that's the best start I think that we can give them.
Yeah, you bet. And sexual Internet predators could be anyone. In fact, you just don't know who they might be, and maybe we could discuss that a little bit.
Well, you really never know who you're talking to. I mean, you know, the book that I have that's coming out in April, it's called Exposed, The Harrowing Story of a Mother's Undercover Work with the FBI to Save Children from Internet Predators. And, you know, I really can't talk too much about the book at this time. It's just one of those rules that have been made so far for me. But as it comes closer to release date, I'll be able to talk extensively about it. But, you know, I go on the Internet, and I use a different persona. Certainly, we all know that the authorities are doing that now. Police officers are doing that, and, you know, FBI agents are doing that. So just as they can go on and pretend that they're children to catch Internet predators are going on. They're posing as different, you know, people than who they really are. They're posing as other children, and they're posing as just, you know, different people. You might be talking to a 62-year-old man who's 500 pounds and bald, and he might send you a picture of a 25-year-old guy who's really good looking and you know, says that he stars in Broadway shows or whatever to entice a child to be excited about wanting to meet them. You really don't know, unless it's your real friend, someone from school, someone you know from the neighborhood, you know their screen name, you're sure you're talking to them. You really have no idea who's on the other end there when you're in a chat room. Even with emails, with message boards, you just have no idea.
Stephanie, what's different in today's society than when you and I were younger?
I don't know how old you are, Dana. Yeah. Well, I think we might be talking about different generations.
Yeah, I think we're somewhat close in age. And regardless, let's say the baby boomers, when we were growing up and we didn't have computers. Well, computers were around, but we certainly didn't have them like we do now, desktops, Internet, and all that sort of stuff. Kids were involved in extracurricular activities. They're out playing sports, they're out playing street hockey on the street, or riding their bicycles or whatever. What's with the ideology, I guess, now of sitting down and the obsession with the Internet, with chat rooms like MSN, and are these kids craving attention, or is it just a trap that they're falling into?
Well, I think just like with video games, you know, Xbox and PlayStations and all this, I think there's a little bit of an addiction to these things. I think that's part of it. The other part of it is, though, that there are a lot of kids out there who may be isolated. They may come home from school and their parents aren't there, which is much more prevalent today than when I was young. I'm not sure about when you were young. But, you know, when a lot of times you had at least one parent in the house when you came home from school, or siblings around, now everybody has so much to do, they're so busy, and you find a lot of kids at home alone after school, and this is a great way for them to network with the outside world. And you also find, you know, that just in general, there are a lot of people that are lonely or isolated or home ill, and so, you know, the internet is a wonderful avenue for people to connect with the rest of the world, but, you know, there are dangers, as with anything else, that people have to learn to watch out for.
What do the parents look for as far as signs? I know it's easier said than done sometimes, but if you notice something with your child, and it could be a sign that you need to investigate it further, that he may be or she may be a victim of a internet predator.
Well, I think that there are certain, you know, you're never going to know for sure. There are signs, just as, you know, kids who might use drugs and things like that, and you look for these typical signs, but I don't think there's any one short thing to look for. But there are signs, you know, there are kids who do isolate themselves in their rooms and get very nervous when their parents walk in. They might just close the screen down. You might find your kids up late at night or in the middle of the night on the internet. And that's kind of a sign, too. They can get very secretive, and they can even start getting phone calls, and you don't know who they're talking to, and they don't want to reveal who they're talking to. You know, I wouldn't say that the internet issue is something you're going to look at and say, okay, there's something very wrong here because this is what my child is doing. But I think that the main thing, though, is that when you have a minor child, you should be able to have access to their account. Mm-hmm. And you should be able to go into see their emails. And I know that sounds horrible and it sounds invasive, but the other side of it is, in this day and age, when you have minor children who use the internet, it's a vehicle for them to get in a lot of trouble. And it may not be that they're not trustworthy. It may just be that the people they're communicating with aren't trustworthy, and I do believe that parents have the right to have full access to their children's internet accounts.
Absolutely. If you're just tuning in, attorney, author, Stephanie Good is here with me. We're talking about safety on the internet, internet predators, and a little bit we'll get into what's been going on in Aruba. Dateline NBC has been doing a good job. I agree with you there. However, you don't see a whole lot of other mainstream media outlets doing any work like that. We've done some work here on my program as far as internet safety goes. Your thoughts, Stephanie, on what the mainstream media could do, and am I wrong? Maybe they are doing a good job.
Well, I think there should definitely be more programs like Dateline, and I think they should go even further than that. What you see is really a small slice of what's going on the internet. And some of what you see on Dateline also, you have to realize, is for effect. It is for ratings. And so while I could get 20 guys over to my house, you know, before the night is over if I wanted to, the other side of that is, will these guys be convicted?
Right.
Because there are very careful guidelines that you have to go by. And from what I've seen on that show, and don't quote me on this, because
no.
I'm not, you know, I don't sit and watch every single one of their shows. I've seen some of the chats that these people have, and there are some fine lines there that look like they're being crossed you know, as far as entrapment issues,
right.
that, you know, I think the show, the purpose of the show is to just show people how easy it is and how many guys there are out there trying to get at kids. So they have a different agenda than, say, I would have working on the Internet. So I would pursue things in a completely different manner than what they're doing. I completely forgot whatever the question was that you originally asked me.
Actually, you answered that, and then you went right into what the next question was going to be. I was going to talk about entrapment. But let's talk a little bit about an Internet child sexual predator, or an Internet predator, sex predator, and a child sexual predator that doesn't use the Internet. Really, is there any difference from the rehabilitative stance?
Oh, no. Rehabilitation? Absolutely. You know, in my opinion, and from what I've learned and from what I've seen, these guys are sick people who the recidivism rate is extremely high. They'll do it over and over and over again. I don't think the Internet... I think the Internet makes it easier for them, you know. Certainly, the Internet has made it much easier for sexual predators to get at kids. There's no question about it. I mean, the statistics have changed, you know, depending on what report you're looking at. You could see one that says one in four girls on the Internet are, you know, approached by a sexual predator in chat rooms. You can see one in five, then you see 89%. It's just the Internet makes it much easier for these guys to get to kids. That's the big difference. But as far as any kind of rehabilitation is concerned, are you talking about actually rehabilitating sexual predators?
Yeah.
Because from everything I've learned, the only way to be sure you're going to keep them away from kids is really, aside from locking them away for the rest of their lives, you know, it's the same thing with any addiction.
Yeah.
You have a person who's addicted to something, and if they make up their mind that they're going to stay away from it, then, you know, hopefully they're going to stay away from it. I just don't see that happening with many of these sexual predators. A lot of the time, the problem is that they get it into their heads that what they're doing is okay, that what they're doing is really, you know, called love, and they convince themselves that they're okay and that it's the laws that are wrong. So it's a real tough issue. It's a real tough thing to change. I'm not saying that there has never been a sexual predator who has stopped doing this, but I don't think there's a cure for it. I think it's just as with drug addicts and alcoholics, it's just an issue that you struggle with for your entire life, and you have to make up your mind to stay away.
Yeah, it's no. I agree with you. There's no difference between a child sexual predator or one that uses the Internet. The Internet is just a good tool for them to use. The free speech advocates, the garbage that, like you, I agree with you, the Internet is a wonderful tool, but there's a lot of garbage on there too. The free speech people that say that anything on the Internet is should be allowed because it's free, free speech, I should say, and that the government shouldn't step in. Just curious quickly on your thoughts on regulating the Internet better. What could be done as far as protection for children?
Well, regulating the Internet, I don't know how you could do that any more than what they're doing right now. I don't know. I mean, it just seems to me, even if you see certain websites, like if you go onto AOL, they have very strict guidelines.
Yeah.
The guidelines are broken all day long, every day, all the time. MySpace, the terms of service are violated constantly. There isn't a day that I go on that I don't see that, you know, somebody has violated their terms of service. And if you report them, you'll still see, you know, a week later, they're still there, they're still on, they don't get thrown off. So as much as you would like to see certain things regulated, I don't know how you would really control that. I just don't see it. And as far as free speech is concerned, yeah, there's a limit on that anywhere in the world. You know, I mean, you can't walk onto a plane and yell hijack. You can't sit in a movie theater and yell fire. I mean, those things are not considered free speech.
Right.
But the other side of that is you need somebody there to catch you and arrest you or to bring a complaint against you for violating it. So you know, if I'm sitting in a chat room and some pervert is sitting there instant messaging me disgusting things, and I'm not reporting him, you know, I mean, what he's saying, the things they say to me are definitely a violation of any kind of free speech laws. There's no question about what they're doing is breaking the law. When you talk to a child about having sex and you get explicit, that does not fall within free speech.
Yep.
No, it doesn't.
You bet. I agree completely. And if you're interested in the book Exposed, go to scaredmonkeys.com. You'll see the Amazon link. Stephanie Aruba, I know you co-authored the book. You're close with the family. This has gone on way too long. We've covered that topic on the show over and over and over again. We do what we can to help. This family has gone from tragedy to tragedy to tragedy. There have been no answers for them. There's been bungling and corruption, and well, we could go on and on. I thought I'd spend the next couple of minutes with you just to get your thoughts on Aruba and what's been going on there.
Well, I mean, I don't see anything wonderful happening there. I don't see any big changes. Really, the last few things that I've seen happening there, you know, the drop in tourism that they always deny happening, the issue with Peter DeVries coming forward and saying that Carlo went to the prosecutor and said that he believed that Vandersloot was involved, that Joran Vandersloot was involved. I mean, you know, you get all excited about the things that you think are coming up, that they're happening and it's going to make a big difference in the case, and then you find out that it doesn't make any difference at all because we're dealing with Aruba.
Yeah, exactly.
And I have nothing good at all to say about Aruba.
Yeah. No, for sure. And, you know, it's the family that it just, if you were to define strength and you talk to Beth Holloway Twitty or to Dave Holloway, that's the definition of strength.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
They are both remarkable people.
How they can put up with what's been going on and stay so strong, but it's all about their daughter. If you were to have written an ending, or were able to write an ending to the book Aruba, a secondary ending, a new ending to the book, what would you like that ending to be?
What would I like it to be? Well, I'd like it to be that, of course, that we find Natalie alive. And that, I mean, I, you know, in a perfect world, I'd like to say that she hasn't been harmed and she'll be coming home to her family and putting the pieces of her life back together. In a perfect world, that's what my ending would be. Unfortunately, it's not a perfect world, and I don't see that happening that so quickly. I would love that to be the case. I believe that, you know, the two biggest possibilities are that those boys did something terrible for her and killed her.
Yeah.
Or maybe it wasn't an intentional murder. Maybe she died from drugs and alcohol that they might have given her, and you know, without her realizing it. And the other thought that I've had is that possibility that she's been kidnapped into sex slavery and either still on the island there or brought somewhere else. And I see those both really as being, you know, possibilities. Of course, I think the bigger possibility is something, whatever, I think that whatever happened, I do believe that the three boys were involved with it, no matter what it is.
And the bottom line is that somebody in Aruba needs to tell the truth as far as what happens so we can get some answers for the family.
Absolutely.
That's the bottom line. Stephanie, our time is up. I want to thank you for coming on the show. Your new book, Exposed, comes out when?
As of right now, I believe it's April 3rd.
April 3rd. And again, check out scaredmonkeys.com. There's an Amazon link there. Just go to amazon.com. You have a website too, do you not?
Yes, I do, and it is about to be changed. So, but you can find it under my name, www.stephaniegood.com or rstephaniegood.com. Either one will get you there. It is about to be changed drastically, but you can get there. There's even a comment section if you'd like to leave a comment. My new book isn't even on that site yet, so it's about to undergo a big transition.
Thank you for coming on the show. You're welcome here anytime.
Thanks so much, Dana.
Okay, take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
That's Stephanie Good, author, New York Times bestselling author, attorney, you name it, she's done it. And I got a little bit of breaking news here. Wendy Murphy will be on at the bottom of the hour in about 7 minutes, and then we will be talking to Tim Miller from Texas Equisearch at 8:45 Central Time, 9:45 Eastern, to discuss the Jody Sanderholm case, sad case. So Tim Miller will be here with us at 9:45. My name is Dana Pretzer. You're listening to the Scared Monkeys Radio Network, and we'll be back in just a few minutes with Wendy Murphy to talk about John Cooey and confessions. How difficult is it for the police to get a confession?
Whether I'm right or whether I'm wrong, whether I find a place in this world or never belong, I gotta be me. I gotta be me. What else can I be? I want to live, not merely survive. And I won't give up this dream of life that keeps me alive. I gotta be me. I gotta be me. The dream that I see. A world of success is waiting for me if I heed the call. I won't settle down, won't settle for less, as long as there's a chance that I can have it all. I'll go it alone. Must be. I can't be right for somebody else if I'm not right for me. I gotta be free. I've gotta be free. Daring to try to do it or die.
Okay, we're back. This is the Scared Monkeys Radio Network. Our webpage is located at www.scaredmonkeys.com/radio. That's www.scaredmonkeys.com/radio. There you can listen to the show live, listen to podcasts of past shows, daily commentaries, whatever. You can download them, you can play them. They've got them set up pretty good. Wendy Murphy will join me here in just a minute. We're going to talk about the recent ruling in the Cooey case. John Cooey is the one, the SOB that killed Jessica Lunsford, buried her alive, in fact, is admitted to it. But now two confessions of Cooey's have been thrown out. How difficult is it for a police officer to get a statement from a accused, a confession from an accused? Are there too many rights given to the accused? Is it just as simple as saying, well, I want to talk to a lawyer, and that's it, you have to stop, and if they talk to a lawyer, you know that nothing will be said after that? Wendy Murphy and I will discuss that here in just a couple of minutes on the Dana Pretzer Show here on the Scared Monkeys Radio Network. Okay, we're back. This is the Dana Pretzer Show for January 10th, 2007. The John Cooey case, he's the SOB that is alleged to have killed Jessica Lunsford, buried her alive. It's one of the most graphic, disgusting cases I've ever heard about, read about, or reported about. We've had Mark Lunsford on the show. We've discussed this case over and over again. There's been another court ruling. It's confusing. Where a confession, I know one confession has already been thrown out, but another confession of Mr. Cooey's, where he sort of admitted to committing the crime, was again thrown out. I thought I'd bring Wendy Murphy on. Wendy is a law professor, a cable news analyst, a former DA, and author of a new book coming out here pretty quick, to talk about confessions and just how difficult is it for police officers to obtain confessions, and are there more rules preventing confessions from being entered, or is it just simple, I want to talk to a lawyer and then the police can't do anything? Wendy, always nice to have you on the show.
Good to be with you again, Dana.
this is
a little bit of a cold, so bear with me. You know, I think the first thing I should say about your question is that confessions are really important because obviously they're the most powerful form of evidence short of a videotape of the crime.
Yep.
And confessions are also the thing about which defense attorneys fight hardest to suppress,
right,
because in part they are so strong as evidence of the crime. And related to that is the important concept that we don't want any confession used as evidence unless it's both reliable and obtained fairly by the government. In other words, you know, we have Miranda laws and rights about the right to, important rights related to the right to remain silent, because we don't want the government ever to be in a position of cavalierly causing a person to become the witness against themselves, and we certainly don't want government power to become abused and people whacked over the head with a bat in order to make them confess. And, you know, there are all kinds of important principles at stake in terms of protecting individual freedom against the very powerful state. But there are absolutely, you know, profound examples of an abuse of the underlying principle by defense attorneys who, in a sense, ask for way more by way of a punishment against the state for things that really don't rise to the level of constitutional violation. In other words, sometimes information and evidence in the form of a suppression of a confession gets suppressed, and it really doesn't provide any constitutional benefit. And those are the kinds of things that bother me. And I actually have a chapter about the Cooey case in my book coming out in July. It doesn't yet include a reference to the more recent statement, confession, admission, whatever you want to call it, that was suppressed.
Right.
And let me start by saying that, as you noted, Dana, two different confessions or statements have been suppressed at this point. Let me start with the second one first, since it's the most newsworthy.
Yep.
The judge this week suppressed not a confession, but a statement made by Cooey to Orlando police detectives who were questioning him about an unsolved murder from 1985, the murder of a girl named Regina May Armstrong. It's still unsolved, and they wanted to ask him about it, because he lived in the area at the time she went missing. She was a little girl whose body didn't even, I think, get discovered for a couple of years. But the reason they asked him about it is because they suspected perhaps he had a pattern of behavior. And when they asked him about it, they gave him his Miranda rights.
Right.
He waived his Miranda rights, and he said, "I didn't have anything to do with that. This is the first time I ever done anything like this." And, of course, what he was referencing was his murder of Jessica Lunsford when he said, "This is the first time I ever done anything like this."
Right.
So, obviously, the police dealing and the prosecutor dealing with the Jessica Lunsford case wanted to use that statement as some evidence that he was basically admitting the first time he ever did anything like that was a confession about his murder of Jessica Lunsford. The defense moved to suppress that statement, not on the grounds that they had earlier moved to suppress the big confession he gave to police investigating the Lunsford case, but on the grounds that when the police asked him about the Regina May Armstrong murder, mm-hmm. even though he had gotten his Miranda rights, his lawyers had already filed a paper with the court saying he asserts his right to counsel and his right to remain silent, mm-hmm. which means he cannot be questioned without his attorneys present, period, end of discussion. And the only legal beef was whether that rule of law means you can't question him about Jessica Lunsford or about anything at all, including, you know, whether he went to Wendy's for lunch that day. Of course, he was in jail, so I don't mean that literally. But
yep.
But the point is the law is not so well developed as to whether if a person asserts their right to remain silent and has appointed counsel in one case, that that means no police anywhere can ask him about any other case. That I think that's not necessarily the right ruling by this judge, but I also don't think it matters very much because, Dana, even without that statement, even without the big confession that was suppressed for different reasons, there's still a ton of evidence against this guy, including a confession he gave in jail after he was locked up, which is not going to be suppressed, and it's going to be powerful evidence against him. And there's a lot of other evidence as well, including DNA and other forensics. So I'm not worried about the integrity of the case. But, you know, I think that it's a statement to, a testament to the integrity of our legal system that the most beastly of all murderers, and this guy really takes the cake, could nevertheless have truly fair justice in the sense that a judge who wanted to be fair and apply the law even-handedly, as he might to someone charged with a much lesser crime, said it's not right. His lawyers had filed his statement about wanting to remain silent and assistance of counsel and so forth. So even though the police didn't do anything intentionally wrong in asking him about the Regina May Armstrong murder, the fact is the guy is an idiot, and he blabbed out something about the Jessica Lunsford case, and, you know, it's been suppressed. I don't think the decision was correct, but I have tremendous respect for any judge who can rise above what I'm sure he feels is a great deal of public pressure to just lock this guy up and burn him at the stake. And the fact that we don't do that and that, you know, we have the capacity to be civilized against the most uncivilized, I think is a good thing.
Are police officers, detectives, investigators, are they handcuffed when it comes to obtaining confessions vis-a-vis the mainstream media? And there's very few in the mainstream media, except maybe Bill O'Reilly, yourself, that are saying that there's plenty of other evidence, folks. Just relax. They're saying the cops screwed up. This guy said he wanted a lawyer, but they kept questioning him anyway. What the hell? We'll throw the dice and we'll see if he says anything and see if it gets admitted. How difficult is it for law enforcement to obtain a confession? Basically, you sit down, somebody, well, in this case, I agree with you. I don't agree with the ruling either, but it's not that important.
Earlier confession, though,
would
have been a big deal. Yeah.
Right.
Police, the interesting thing is, it is hard to get a confession in the sense that most people don't want to say that they did something bad, and it's probably instilled in us from birth that we don't ever want to confess to something we've done because we know we're going to get in trouble. So there's a natural disinclination. On the other hand, we're moral animals, and people like to cleanse their conscience if they have a conscience. And so it's interesting how many people confess or try to explain things which comes out as a confession, even after knowing that they have the right to remain silent, notwithstanding, you know, our profound awareness at this point about the right to remain silent. It's in popular culture. It's in CSI. We all know about the right to remain silent. And yet lots of people do confess, notwithstanding the fact they probably know they shouldn't. And I think that's a good thing. On the other hand, sometimes you really can't solve a case without a confession.
Exactly.
And you know who did it, and the police are wringing their hands, and the guy's slick, and he's got an attorney that cost a fortune, or not so much in this case, but you know, when the government has a great deal of power, you almost have to feel bad for the person being charged or accused or suspected. But sometimes the guy on the other side of the accusation is more powerful than the government in terms of resources and knowledge and slickness and skills. And I think police get really irritated when, especially for career criminals, when they're so slick they know how to cheat the system. And that's, I think, somewhat why some cops cheat themselves, which is not an excuse, it's just an observation. And yet I have to go back to the Cooey confession that got suppressed, the big one that got suppressed, to explain something else about why I think what the cops did wasn't really wrong.
Right.
I mean, I understand the judge's decision. I really don't take much issue with it. But let me back up a little. I don't think enough people are saying the truth about what the cops did to get the big confession in the beginning, which, by the way, led to the discovery of the body. And all of that's a good thing. What happened is the police come up to Cooey and they have a sort of a chit-chat with him, which is common strategy for cops. They want to ask the kind of non-threatening questions that will build a rapport, and yeah, that's, you know, police investigative work 101. And then he was very chatty, Kathy, about it, you know, really kind of open, and the police said, good, this is going well. And then they started to talk about Jessica Lunsford, and he got kind of squeamish. And then they mentioned, well, and he said something like, well, I didn't do it, and I don't know what you're talking about. And they said, well, sure, you know, we understand. Would you be willing to take a polygraph?
Right.
And he hems and haws about it and starts to talk about wanting a lawyer. Well, the cops totally took advantage of the fact that the guy was a dope, which, by the way, is not unconstitutional. There's no constitutional right to be protected from being an idiot. But they kind of sort of tried to toy with him a little bit about whether when he said he wanted a lawyer, he only meant that he wanted a lawyer for the polygraph and not for all purposes.
Uh-huh.
And they said it to him. They said, you know, okay, so you want a lawyer when you do the polygraph. Okay, that's good, but, you know, you want to talk to us some more, right? And he sort of was unclear about whether he wanted to talk some more, but he was not explicit about wanting a lawyer and wanting not to talk any further after he made reference to an attorney with regard to the polygraph. So the police took advantage of his equivocation, they took advantage of his lack of clarity, and they pressed on, and the guy started spilling his guts. Yes, I killed her, and I buried her alive, and I did terrible things, and it was the most grotesque but very compelling and very credible confession. And the police, I think, were very pleased that they were able to uncover the body and otherwise solve the case, and so this is all good. The police have been attacked,
yep,
by the defense bar, some of whom have said the police misconduct in this case is so outrageous, not only should the evidence be suppressed of the confession, the whole case should be thrown out to punish the cops for their bad behavior. Mm-hmm. That's how you keep the government in check. That's what we need to do in this country,
yeah,
to keep civil liberties in place and so forth. And that just boils my blood because, mm-hmm, you know, there has to be, we always talk about proportionality in sentencing. If you commit a very serious crime, you should get a proportionate sentence. Well, you know, when police commit what I think is at most a negligent infraction of the Miranda rule, you know, you don't toss the whole case out, especially not, you know, where it was not intentional, it was on some level just manipulative, but that's acceptable. And keep in mind, Dana, and I don't know if people realize this, it's not like his, you know, Fifth Amendment rights per se were violated, or that they coerced a confession out of him or tortured him or battered him, which would justify that kind of punishment. You do dismiss a murder charge when police beat up a suspect. That's uncivilized, and you want to punish the government to stop it from happening in the future. But keep in mind, giving someone their Miranda rights is not even a core constitutional function, not in the same way that other constitutional freedoms are. It's not in the Bill of Rights. In fact, it was only rendered, quote-unquote, constitutionally based a couple of years ago. When Miranda was first decided in the 60s, the court said this is not a constitutional mandate. This is just a suggestion by the United States Supreme Court as a mechanical device by which the Fifth Amendment right to remain silent can be given value and meaning and force and respect and so forth. And it was a good idea. You know, no one doubts that it's an important principle to tell someone their rights so that they can avoid having them be violated is sort of common sense. But it was not a constitutional mandate until a couple of years ago when the court said, well, it's deeply rooted in our history now and in our practice and procedure, and we think it deserves constitutional heft. But by no means does it rise to the level of
other aspects of the Bill of Rights. So again, with proportionality in mind, you don't want to throw out murder cases, as some defense attorneys have argued should happen with the Cooey case, to punish cops for what was not intentional wrongdoing with regard to a not very well developed or established core fundamental constitutional freedom or civil liberty.
Well, I tell you, it's something that, again, you have to wonder when you look at Mark Lunsford and look at the families and they see this kind of legal bantering going on, how it affects them. But again, this is something that Mr. Cooey will be convicted and executed, hopefully. Wendy, thanks for coming on the show.
You're welcome, Dana.
Appreciate it. Sure. Bye-bye. My name is Dana Pritzer. This is the Scared Monkeys Radio Network. We'll be back in a minute with Tim Miller from Texas Equisearch.
Well, all my friends are bopping the blues, it must be going round. All my friends are bopping the blues, and it must be going round. I love you, baby, but I must be rhythm bound. Well, the doctor told me, boy, you don't need no pill. Yeah, that doctor told me, son, you don't need no pill. Just a handful of niggas and jukebox to cure your ill. Well, all my friends are bopping the blues and it must be going round. All them cats are bopping the blues and it must be going round. I love you, baby, but I must be rhythm bound. Well, the cat bug bit me, man, I don't feel no pain. Yeah, jitterbug caught me, man, I don't feel no pain. I still love you, baby, but I'll never be the same. Yeah.
Okay, we're back. This is the Dana Pritzer Show for January 10th, 2007. We've got Tim Miller on the line. We've all been following the Jody Sanderholm case, both on the Texas Equisearch webpage and the Scared Monkeys webpage and on mainstream media. There's been a conclusion, I guess, so to speak. Tim, what's going on with this case?
Well, I don't know there's been a total conclusion. An arrest has not been made yet. And number one, Dana, if you don't mind me starting out to say that my condolences, Equisearch's condolences, and I think everybody's listening to right now that the condolences go out certainly to the family. What a terrible loss.
Yes.
I mean, Jody was a girl, a valedictorian of her class, in dance, in dance clubs, pre-dentistry, just had everything in the world going for her. This was not one of them girls that decided to run off and go do some drugs or go hang out with a boyfriend or something. It was just, from everything we understand, a crime of opportunity and a terrible loss, terrible, terrible loss for a wonderful family, a terrible, terrible loss for a wonderful community. And I want to praise law enforcement up there for a small community in a case like this, which they've never had one like this. What a tremendous job they did. They knew there were some resources that they needed that they didn't have. I'm not going to say typical, but in some ways typical law enforcement agency that was so territorial. It's law enforcement agencies, called some organizations to come in and assist. KBI was there, Kansas Bureau of Investigations, and of course, Police Department, Sheriff Department, Texas Equisearch, and another organization. And again, I think I shared it a couple weeks ago when I got off the search in South Carolina.
Yep.
That it proves that these volunteer organizations can get together, they can work together. For one purpose, this purpose was for Jody. We did a tremendous job with them, and I'm not saying that to pat myself or Equisearch on the back, but we did a tremendous job. We was called to do a job. They felt as though it was possible the boat was in the water. They had divers in the water the day before. The divers just didn't go out far enough. Apparently, the car floated longer than anybody anticipated it would float. It made it out in the lake farther than anybody anticipated it would make it out. And the divers did a good job, but they didn't go out far enough.
Mm-hmm.
We put the boat in the water, and before the trailer and the truck pulled out of the boat ramp, we already had the car located on side scan sonar. We put one of our divers down there. He got the license plate number, description of the vehicle, and everything. It was Jody's. And it was less than in 1 minute, and it was an incredible, incredible find. And again, it's a wonderful, wonderful volunteer that EquiSearch has that go out there and their hearts in what they're doing, and then other searchers found her body pretty close to the same time, about 8 miles away, and law enforcement had a job to do, which was doing an investigation. They didn't have the resources to do the searching, and everybody came together and made something happen. And of course, not what we wanted to happen.
Right.
We wanted Jody to be safe, go home, sleep in her own bed tonight. That did not happen. But she's found. She was found in a period of time that there's plenty of evidence.
Yep.
Which I don't doubt there's going to be a conviction. And the family has some closure. And the last I heard, and I don't even know if I should say this, she was found soon enough, there may possibly, and I'm saying that conservatively, possibly could be an open casket.
Okay.
So everybody did a tremendous job that we don't want to always do. So anyhow, we're just blessed and thank God for the resources and thank God for being there. He's the number one that needs all the credit.
Well, and it's great work on your guys' behalf. And just quickly before I let you go, Tim, you talk about a small police department. They've never really had a case like this before, and they certainly don't have the resources. How quickly can Texas EquiSearch, once they're requested, turn around and get somewhere to help?
You know, it was ironic, and again, it's God's work, not ours. When we got the call from Detective Arnett down there, and he called and said, "Can you help?" We were actually, the boat and the sonar equipment was in Oklahoma on a search we've been working for about 3 months where we feel as though we've got the image of a body there, and they went back down there to scan it again to see if they could find it, and we had some divers in there. So when the Detective Arnett called and said, "Is there any way he can help?" Well, our boat and sonar equipment and stuff was almost 2 hours away.
Wow.
And we got on the very next flight out. And we was there within a matter of hours from when we got that call. And again, it was 100% God's work where the boat, the sonar equipment was. Continental Airlines helped us out so much in getting us on these searches for these missing loved ones. And I just can't say enough for the people that are involved with us. The law enforcement agencies that have enough confidence in us to call us, and these poor families out there that, you know, again, I've said this 100 times, this is not a career I would have ever chosen. I've been on the side of the fence that Jody's family's been on, so I am one person that can say I know what these families go through, and because of that, I think is our dedication that why we do what we do and why our success rate is where it is. And I would only pray the day comes when we don't get any more phone calls because we're not needed. And unfortunately, I don't think that day will ever come, Dana.
Well, we can all hope for that, but you're right. That day probably won't come. You're doing God's work. Tim Miller, thanks for joining me this evening.
Thank you so much.
Take care, my friend. Bye-bye.
Good night.
That's Tim Miller from Texas EquiSearch. You are listening to the Dana Pretzer Show on Scared Monkeys Radio Network. We'll be right back.
End of the spring, and here she comes back. Hi, 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 hi.
Okay, we're back. This is the Scared Monkeys Radio Network. My name is Dana Pretzer. Thanks to Stephanie Good, Wendy Murphy, and Tim Miller for dropping on the show this evening. Again, I remind you that our webpage is located at www.scaredmonkeys.com/radio. And I'll give you an opportunity in the last 5 minutes of the show to call in if you like, toll-free, I emphasize toll-free, 1-877-842-7884, 1-877-842-7884, that's toll-free. You can call in and comment on my guest this evening or talk about any topic you want. Again, Stephanie Good's book, Exposed, there's a link to it on scaredmonkeys.com. Check it out. It is available through Amazon. It's a fascinating story. And when the book is released, I will be having Stephanie back on the show. I can guarantee you to talk more about that. And, you know, what can you say about Tim Miller? You know, Tim Miller, last we talked to him, he was supposed to have surgery. I'm wondering if he had it, or knowing Tim, he's probably delayed it again to go out and help in this case. But Jody was found. It's a sad conclusion, but the body was found. And when he talks about police services and their, you know, jurisdictional issues or being able to call and ask for help, that's a smart police service that calls. Because name a small police service that has a boat with side scan sonar. I don't know. And this is a volunteer organization that has the men and the equipment to go out and help in a case like this. And it was a wise call. And, you know, hopefully there is enough evidence. Tim is pretty sure of that to get a conviction in this case. Anyway, toll free, 1-877-842-7884. 1-877-842-7884. That's toll free. You can call in and talk about anything you like. And you know, Wendy Murphy, Wendy tells it like it is. And there's some things I don't agree with, some things I do agree with. And law enforcement are handcuffed when it comes to obtaining confessions. There is a rule of law. I know I understand that. But how difficult can it be? And in the second case, you know, thank God there's other evidence in the Cui matter. But in the second case, he's being questioned on a totally separate matter where he waived his right to counsel. Okay, yes, there was some kind of a motion filed and all that kind of stuff. But the person that is being questioned should have the right to decide whether or not he wants to speak, if he's competent, if he wants to speak to law enforcement and confess, because it makes it more difficult for law enforcement to obtain confessions, which sometimes are pivotal to solving cases, rather than to, I'll talk to a lawyer. And you let them talk to a lawyer, and then I don't imagine there are very many lawyers out there that would tell their clients to confess to a crime. None that I know of, but it's not all NYPD Blue and Sipowicz where he bangs the notepad and the pen in front of the perp, isn't that what he called them, and told them to write out the story. It's not that simple. And some of the tactics that they used in that television show, I know it's just a television show, would never last a minute in court today. My name's Dana Pretzer. I thank you for joining me here on the Scared Monkeys Radio Network. Again, remember our webpage is www.scaredmonkeys.com/radio. Thanks to my guests, Stephanie Good, Wendy Murphy, and Tim Miller. We'll see you next time here on the Scared Monkeys Radio Network.